Mr. President, members of Congress, you've been making a lot of noise about taking our guns away. But you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come to us and take it.
One shot at a time.
Just like Gonzales. We're keeping our guns.
She's back. Miss Amy is back with an all-new Living Way Out Here on the Survival Circle Network. Join Amy for an uplifting hour of fun on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Survival Circle. Inviting you to join me for the Shooting Bench PM, the evening edition. Shooting Bench PM is your source for all things guns. Guns, hunting, reloading, firearms training, competition, and a host of other firearms-related topics.
Look out, bushy tail, tonight you'll be in the pot. Gun boogie, draws a beat so fine. Look out, big boy. He's loaded all the time.
The Shooting Bench PM does not include news or politics unless it is directly related to your gun rights. Thursday evenings from 9 to 11 p.m. Mountain Time.
I'll be back, little gal, when your pappy runs out of shells.
I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag.
You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across.
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Do you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, get off of my back? Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, Join me for the Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on the Shooting Bench. And we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
All right, sorry for the little delay there. I was trying to get a hold of Concretin and have him shut off the deal. We're gonna have to figure out something about this. But all right, here we are. Anyway, it's a Shooting Bench. It's Wednesday. It's the 18th of February, and tonight we're gonna spend some time talking about organizing communities a little bit and. This book, One Second After. I see that somebody blew through that pretty quick there. I forgot who it was. Said they had a marathon reading time there on that. T.G. Voss, welcome, and thank you very much. I got your message the other day, so appreciate that. All right, I don't know if the 32 is going yet. It's okay. 32 should be up now. Sorry about that. Looks like both of them are going now. All right, let's move on here. The class that we have scheduled for the 13th and 14th of next month is probably going to have to be moved up a week because I've got another obligation to take care of. So the CCW class on the 13th and the Counter-Strike class on the 14th will most likely be moved to the 20th and 21st. The reloading class scheduled for the 20th will move to the 27th. That's what it's going to be right now. But for the time being, the Battlefield Medic class coming up on the 27th and 28th of this month, weekend after this coming weekend, last weekend of the month, and it is just about full. We can fit probably fit three more in there right now. So if you're interested in that, you better jump on it. All right, let's see. Before we get started here, I'm having a little trouble with the chat room myself. Rights at Risk still having problems. Mine started and been running fine all day, right up until time for the show to come on. So I had to go to chat and go to get that to come on too. I don't know what the heck the matter is. But I had trouble with it yesterday. And I updated Flash Player and it worked fine. It's been working all day since I did that. So you might try that. You might try your Java and update that and see if that fixes it, if any of you are still having problems. So, and then my problem came back, so I'm going to have to work on that tomorrow and see what's going on. I'm not going to go through all the list of everybody that's here. You got a pretty good crowd tonight. I appreciate it. And we're just going to move right on in here. There, his aviator, I'm sorry, you probably should... you probably ought to just hang up because we don't want to ruin the book for you. I've been warning everybody for the last week or 8 or 9 days that tonight was the night. You're supposed to have the book finished and ready to go, and we're going to talk about it tonight quite a bit. And stand by a second. All right. So... Let's get started. If you haven't read it yet and you don't want it spoiled, then you better not listen. But we're going to go ahead and get started on it. It's a magnificent book. It's written in such a way that you know, it really feels like you're right there as you go through this. And it's very realistic as far as what could and what will happen if we are ever in a EMP scenario here. So we had the full show on EMP, so we don't have to go through the effects of that too much. But looking at what happened to this community, and it very much reminded me of, what was that show? Was it the morning after or the day after? Not One Second After. It's another one. And it was about nuclear war in the United States. And it started out, it was a little slow taking off because it had people visiting and going to ball games and boyfriend problems and fixing dinner and going to work and all this stuff. Very, very mundane, hard to hold your interest there for the first 20 or 30 minutes of it or whatever it was. And so what they were doing was just showing how it's going to be like if it ever happens here. It's not going to be a matter of, okay, the missiles are coming. Everybody run down to Walmart and get all the water that you can and get your guns loaded up and move everybody down to the basement and everything. Everybody get ready because it's happening now. It was very much a surprise deal. Some of the people that lived in the Midwest there saw some missile silos open up, you know, in the middle of the cornfields and wheat fields and whatever. So that was their first indication, but they still didn't know that it wasn't training or something. And that's how the book started out. A little bit slow right in the beginning because it was, D.G. Voss painted your gun green. Well, that's your wife painted her Glock 42 green. Well, it could be worse, I guess. It could have been pink. But depending on how bright a green it is, it may not be such a bad thing. Anyway, that Iowa Cat said the book is written in such a way that even she could understand it. Well, it wasn't too hard to understand. Matter of fact, it was written in such a way that you really, you know, any third grader should be able to read that book and feel like they were there. It's not written so it goes over anybody's head for anything, I don't think. And a little bit slow taking off, started out just like this other movie. And then they had some trouble, you know, the radio didn't work, TV didn't work, and it was off for a while. Lights went out. Some cars broke down out on the highway and all of that. And the guy, the main character of the book, for a while thought it was probably just a power outage or something. But he's probably the first one that come to the realization here that, you know what? So there may be more to this than what we're seeing here. So after a little bit of checking around and whatnot, well, he figured out that it, in fact, was an EMP. And so one of the first things that he discovered there after they learned that was that his old Edsel and a few other cars around still run. That's how they kind of really carved it in stone there that it was an EMP when they found out that some of the older cars were still running. And everything else was broke down. Now, the whole book from then on goes through the major things that we're likely to experience if we happen to have an EMP here. And I've talked to two or three, you know, good old boys. Oh, yeah, I was raised in the woods. I can get by without power. And I appreciate that, and I know you can, and I know I can. But that's, an extended camping trip, sure. I go out there with a sleeping bag and a magnesium fire starter. But I don't even need that, to tell you the truth. And that's fine. I can go out there for a week, 2 weeks, go out there for a month. But when you find that there's no refrigeration, you're out there for a month, you're doing fine, but do we know that your little sister, who is a diabetic, How are they doing? How's grandma on the kidney dialysis machine? Manufacturing has come to a screeching halt. People are dying just as fast as they can. We're not getting medicine shipped. We're not getting medicine manufactured. The old folks home and in the hospitals, schools are out, and it doesn't take too long before the pirates start going crazy, the bandits. And there was a significant part of that book dedicated to the fact that training, to get some training. They put together a militia with the youth and some of the more experienced adults around there. C7, you're going to have to forget your hair dryer, buddy. I'm sorry, but it's going to be gone. And now, look, just think about all the things. No cell phone, no telephone, period. And you can sit there and say, well, yeah, that may be a good thing. I'll learn to live with it. You know, for the first few days, maybe it will. But emergencies are going to happen. There's going to be one of the largest things there was infections. Whatever medicine there was in the town, whatever antibiotics there was. Now, there was no mention of colloidal silver in this book. And I was just dying, wanting to resend that book and give them some colloidal silver, tell them how to make it. I said, we can solve a whole lot of we can shorten this book up with all the misery that you're having here by getting people to making their own silver. Well, there's no mention of that. It was all there was also no mention, a little bit of mention of essential oils, not much, but a little bit. But there was no mention of going out in the woods and finding anything that could help with that kind of stuff. And just the medicine that was available. Now, a lot of the medicine has to be refrigerated. It can only stay refrigerated for so long. You go and confiscate all the ice in the ice machines around town and refrigerators and stuff, try to keep the medicine cold. A lot of people aren't wanting to give up their ice because they've got their own medicine or they've got their food. They got things that they're trying to protect. So this is turning into a Class A cluster here that is not getting any better. The diabetic deal, yeah, big eye-opener. Now, fact is, if you have, there's certain types of pens out there that do not have to be refrigerated. If you have a pump, there's certain things you can go for a certain amount of time without refrigeration. The kind of insulin that that little girl had in the story, required refrigeration. And once it goes down to room temperature, especially after it's been opened, but even if it's not opened for a while, it'll start losing its effectiveness pretty quick. Pretty soon you're going to have to start getting double the amount, triple, quadruple, and pretty soon you're going to shoot a whole bottle in there and get little or no results. And then you're going to wind up with, severe dehydration and all kinds of other diabetes related symptoms there, and then death. Well, in the end, when things were just starting to get kind of halfway back on track a little bit, communications being restored to some degree, and this and that, well, the little girl wound up dying, and she was dead as a result of the fact that there was no electricity. And right about the time that, she could have been saved, it was just within hours, literally, or maybe a day of being too late. So, B2 basic natural remedies for diabetes are pretty scarce. There are some plants and herbs out there that will both raise and lower blood sugar. But when you have juvenile type 1 diabetes, there's really not anything out there that I'm aware of, and I've looked into it quite a bit because I have a relative that is diabetic, and I've thought about this extensively. So, yeah, you know, that's a good point, Minnie. The pumps, not only the fact that they use batteries, but there's a very complicated electronics in there. Pumps will quit working in 1 second. Right along with the cars and the radios and the televisions and the telephones and everything else, insulin pumps will be dead. So you're going to have to, the thing to put back certainly is the pins that don't require the degree of refrigeration that the other insulin does. Yeah, there's natural remedies there, and for type 1 you can probably slow it down a little bit. You might reduce the effects just a little, the symptoms just a tad, but probably just enough to get you through an emergency for a day or so. You're not going to keep somebody stabilized for months on end. The other thing too is the thing that you check your blood with. I forgot what you call it. I'm trying to think of it. But you got these little strips that go in there. You check your blood sugar. That's not going to work. So you're going to have to guess at it. You're going to have to let the symptoms go long enough that they are detectable visually, or you know, by fever, dilated eye, dehydration, whatever it may be, and then damage is already starting to be done before you figure out that she needs insulin. And even then, you don't know how high the blood sugar is. You don't know how much insulin. You're going to have to be real careful what you feed them. Try to keep them on a low-carb diet as much as possible. But Hopper, you say she died about 7 months before the truck showed up. I don't remember what it was exactly, but I do know that they were on the phone with the doctor in another town right there, and he wouldn't ship any. I think the trucks had already shown up because their communications had been established. Thank you, B2 Basics, glucose meter. Duh. But communications had been established and stuff was on the way. So even if it was, if it would have been a day or two earlier, they may have could have provided their own transportation and shipping and managed to get some of that insulin to that little girl. Cause he talked to some other doctor, and I don't remember if it was a military doctor or what it was, but anyway, so that's going to be a problem. Any medical problem at all. So we have, a dog bite, a gunshot wound, a scratch. Then there's all these infections. Many, they didn't check their blood before there was meters, to the best of my knowledge. You wait until you get the symptoms and deal with it just in the manner that I was just talking about, as far as I know. So that means that their blood sugar probably could be as high as 400, 500, 600 before it's really visible from the outside. You have to pay attention because you can kind of... I figured this out one time... when my daughter was, we took her to McDonald's. Matter of fact, we had just come from, 30 minutes before that, from taking her to the doctor for a checkup. And we stopped at a McDonald's over on, I forgot the name of the road. Anyway, it was on the east side of Albuquerque, over there, and to get a Coke. And we told them specifically that she had to have diet, and so she drank that and everything was fine, got home, and she started being real lethargic and not her normal self and all that, and we checked her blood, and it was 500 and something. And it was because they gave her a regular Coke. Now, a regular Coke is fine if the blood is way low. The sugar is way low. You want to get a Coke because that's one of the fastest ways to bring that blood sugar up real quick. But anyway, that wasn't the case. So anyway, so we've thought about this, and we've actually talked about it around here locally to a degree. And Pumpkin Cat, you didn't dip the strips in your urine for acidosis. What is it, Keith? I forgot what they called that. Key acidosis or something like that. Forgot what it was. Anyway, it was, and even then, it wasn't too far back. Prior to that, people just died before they figured out. It wasn't too many years before that because they had to wait until the symptoms showed, because they had no means to check it, there were thousands and thousands of amputations and other problems that happened because of losing their, not being able to check their blood sugar properly. So even if they did check through the urine for a little while, it still wasn't very long before that they didn't check it at all. So to answer your question, Minnie, in the beginning, there was no way. People died of diabetes for hundreds of years before we got it all figured out. I don't know when diabetes was first successfully diagnosed. I have no idea. Ketosis. Thank you, Beaver Burner. you're looking for ketones. Yeah, that's what you're looking for, ketones. And so anyway, we've got to look thinking about getting the community organized, and we actually started this probably 2 years ago, thinking about different things. Reading that book has kind of sent me in a different direction here on this deal. So some of the things that you might want to consider is looking at, now the thing that's going to be hard to do is realizing that some people are going to have to leave their homes. There's going to come a time when you're going to have to band together. Now, if you noticed in the book, everybody was able to stay home pretty well until there were some robberies and some burglaries and, a murder here and there, and people trying to steal the things that they needed. And then this gang started coming over, a thousand or more people. And when they fell on the town, that pushed everybody back, and they had to kind of group up in the center of town there somewhere. So I would look at maybe having three stages in your preparations for a community, for a neighborhood, whether it's a whole town or a rural area out there. But some of the people that live way out by themselves, they need to come to the realization that they're going to die if they don't come in and group up with the other people. They need to get things moved out. They had the American dream of being out there with their milk cow and their horse and their goats and the chickens and being out there where they could, step out on the back porch and pee off the balcony and not have to worry about the neighbors. Now, that's all a wonderful thing. But now it's going against them, because they're going to have to give it up. They're going to have to figure out what they can haul, what they need, where they're going, and then be prepared to do that. They T-Dog, you know, that's exactly right. Anywhere from the first 3 or 4 days to the first 60 days, people are going to die just as damn fast as you can bury them. But we're looking at maybe three stages. Now, your stage one is going to be normal. That's going to be where your homes are now. The only thing that's going to be different in stage one scenario is that we're going to start doing patrols around, I say we, you know, any given community. You're going to start doing patrols around in an area that would, you know, that you're going to determine. You're going to put lines of demarcation out there, whether it's a certain city street, road, county line, whatever, or maybe a choke point where you can set up a roadblock or an ambush or whatever. So you're going to figure out where your lines are going to be. And in stage one, everybody's going to live a normal life. We're just going to, communication is going to be more intense, more, not about intense, but more frequent. We're going to stay in communication with these people that are off out in the woods. And stage two means that we're starting to see, we know that something has happened, EMP, whatever it may be. We know that something has happened, and we're going to have to start encouraging those people to that are out on the right on the outskirts of your stage one boundaries to start moving in. We're going to have a stage two area that is a little more condensed, a little smaller, and this is going to be, we're going to start setting up defensive barriers and stuff in your BB Burner. That was a great movie. Soylent Green is people. So, Yakima Glock, it's arguable right now that you're, you're in stage one position. The only thing that keeps you from being in what I would consider, what I am going to preach to you to try to do, is, yes, we are in our stage one positions and areas. However, we're not performing stage one communications. We're not performing stage one patrols. So stage one will not actually, stage one will not actually take place until an emergency has happened. Now we're going to start exercising stage one precautions, which is going to be patrols and more frequent scheduled communications. And, stage two, then we're going to be that some people the furthest out are probably going to need to start grouping up there a little bit. Now, B2, I don't think that, you know, not necessarily going to be moving towards town. In some cases, in small town areas, and you have those few people, I know where you're at. You have an opportunity there. There's enough people around you that you can probably start setting up things just for the people that you have in your area. It doesn't necessarily have to be in town. There will be a lot of benefits of being in town for the safety, having more people around there. Now, it depends on the town, too. If you're talking about a city, then no, probably not. If you're talking about a village, a town, a community where they have, you know, 3 or 4 gas stations, a couple of motels and a grocery store and an emergency clinic, that would be something that needs to be considered in your stage two preparations. Is that where we want to move to? You're kind of people that are stuck out there with, you know, a dozen people around them within 400 or 500 yards. you'll probably be fine in your stage two preparations. But when you start getting to stage three, when the bandits start coming in hordes, as they will from Seattle, from Spokane, from Olympia, from Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Dallas, Baltimore, Miami, all these places, you know, Albuquerque, Phoenix, when those people start moving out, when those hungry people start moving out, when those hungry, greedy people, those lawless people start moving out of these towns, in stage three, you're going to have to find a concentrated area that is defendable, that will grow crops of some kind, or grow anything. You're going to have a way to defend that stuff. There needs to be areas that you can post a minimal amount of guards so that you don't have to have half the community out there on guard duty because you're not in a defensible position. And Yakima Glock, of course, yeah. If you've got bridges on interstates, railroad trestles, you might want to be careful about because you might need those trains to come in. You're going to have to talk with your community leaders about that and see if you want to get rid of the railroad trestle. But you definitely want to get rid of any bridges that's going to facilitate hordes of people coming in. Now, if the bridges are something that you can simply drive around with a four-wheel drive or something, then you probably might as well just save the materials and supplies and not worry about it. But if you're in a canyon somewhere where you can absolutely shut things down for a while by getting rid of a bridge, then that may be an option for you. But you have to remember, with no bridge and no railroad, you may have a hard time getting supplies in when things do start flowing too. So you might want to keep one route open and not have to worry about defending 4, 5, 6, 10 ways to get into your area and pick one, and then at a choke point set up a station there where you can let people through a few at a time or keep people out with a minimum amount of defensive forces. And that's just something you'll have to kind of figure out as you go along there. Give me one second. We didn't take our break, so I've got to send a quick message here real quickly. All right. Okay. You know, there's so many things to consider with this. And I had thought about, remember Chip Taylor was here. He come here to the shop and spent a good amount of time talking to me about this EMP stuff and everything. And he allowed that I was probably in pretty good shape, or at least had the right attitude for it. And I am, you know, squared away enough, probably more in my mental capacity, my ideas here, than maybe in the physical part. But as I think about different things, my mind just constantly on the go, trying to figure out ways to prevent. You know, in a worst case scenario, trying to keep our wits about us, keep our health as much as we can, and I can't stress this health thing enough. All these guys, all these big, tough, hairy-legged frontiersmen out there, saying that they can make it out there in the woods, and I know we can. I know we can for a while, but to take off and stay out there for 4, 5, 6 months or a year, 5 years, 10 years, until everything is restored, you know, there's not too many people out there that are prepared to do that. I'm not saying it can't be done. It certainly can. But life is going to be different. Rest assured. Now, you got to think about birth control. You know, you stay out there long enough as a couple, sooner or later, there's going to be some urges overcome you that you're going to have to deal with. And if something happens and it doesn't work out the way you planned, and we wind up with a pregnancy to deal with in a situation like that, are you really prepared to deal with that? That would be a major problem, if you ask me. Could you deal with it? Well, hell yeah, you could. I mean, there's been generations of people that did it that way without. If you were out there long enough to be able to have a good shelter set up and have a good, clean, relatively warm place to take care of it and all that, yeah, it can be done. Of course it can. Yeah, B.B. Burner says lack of bathing would be good birth control. Yeah, I'll tell you something else. Lack of shaving will too. The lack of shaving and lack of bathing, good birth control measures right there. But aspirin, ibuprofen bring down fever. That's all well and good until you run out. You're not going to be hiking down the mountain and running into Walmart to grab some more. These guys say they can live up on the mountain for all this long time, but usually they think about, when something happens, we'll just run into town and we'll get cigarettes and we'll get birth control pills and ibuprofen and all this stuff and a pound of ice cream and we'll head back up to the mountain. But that's not going to be happening. Liquid Motrin, it's fine. They're going to quit making it. There's not going to be any. They have shelf lives, folks. They only last for so long. This thing was not over in a week. It wasn't over in a month. It was still going hard and heavy after 6 months. And if it happens, it may go hard and heavy, even worse than in the book, maybe for years. So studying up on what's out there in your areas that might some alternative stuff to make up for some of the things that you can't get. You can go for those of you that live where there's aspen trees, you live up high where there's aspens, or certain types of willows, cottonwoods. There are those are things that have salicylic acid in it, or salicylic whatever it is that is the same as or a substitute for aspirin. Aspen is extremely good. You can take a square of aspirin, aspen, about the size of a postage stamp or a little bigger, just take a piece of that bark out and chew on it, and it has much the same effect as aspirin, as a pain reliever, and I believe even a what do you call it when you make the swelling go down? Anti-inflammatory. Yeah. So those, there are some things out there, but you're waiting until the last minute, or waiting until it happens to try to study up on all this stuff is not going to be the right time. Probably ought to start thinking about some of those things now. Can you make colloidal silver without a battery? Well, yeah, you could. Now, for one thing to remember is most of your decent quality batteries have a 10-year shelf life. Put back a decent supply of 9 volts and don't give them away and don't allow them to be used for anything but making colloidal silver. You set back a good supply, you should have at least... Matter of fact, I'll tell you what, I found a matter of fact, it's right in here somewhere. I had a... What the heck was it? I just...
I just had it in my hands here the other day. I found something that was a, I don't remember if it was a walkie-talkie or a radio or something that had batteries in it, Duracells, that expired in 2011. This is 2015, and they were still working just fine. Now, how long would they last? I'm sure not very long. But they expired in 2011. That means that I probably picked those up in, 2005, 6, maybe earlier than that. So, a good supply of good quality batteries. Don't buy cheap batteries if you're putting some back for the long term. Get Duracells or something that is, the good stuff. And, let me look here down through the chat room here real quick. Batteries, Yakima Glock, no. Most batteries will not be affected by EMP. BB Burner has a point, and this will work to a certain degree, and that is just taking a silver spoon, if you can find a real silver spoon, or a silver coin and suck on it. Yeah, you can get the effects of the silver out that way. You can also, like I've told you many times when we're talking about colloidal silver, you can just take a, put some of your silver that you, I know you've got a bunch of silver stuck back and you're probably buying more right now, right? While the price is starting to rise a little bit, you need to hurry up and do that. Take a little bit of that silver and, store it in some water, pour the water out and use it that way. That will get you some. You can also make a little generator out of, wouldn't hurt to go ahead and make one prior to this happening. Get you one of those little bicycle generators. You're probably not going to get the optimum voltage out of it, but with a little ingenuity, you can take a thing, hook it up to a bicycle or an exercise bike, and something that will generate, somewhere between 20, 30, 35 volts, somewhere in there, and make your silver. Yes, it can be done. There are lots of ways to continue to make your silver even without batteries. But again, one of the best things to do, stick back a decent supply of good quality batteries, 9 volts, double A's, CR123s for flashlights and night vision and stuff. And, triple A's if you need them. I try to avoid things that need triple A batteries. I want only double A's. I try to stay away from C's. Most things now, if you have a few of the old-fashioned flashlights that use C batteries, you might want to put a few back for that. But there are so many flashlights now that are so much better, so much brighter, last so much longer on batteries that are so much tinier. So I really don't have anything right now to use C's for, except a couple of flashlights that I keep for spares and just for that EMP situation there. So, see, I'm having some internet issues right here. I don't know if I'm going to lose you or not, but we're going to keep talking. Let's see, I lost my chat room. Okay, and then it came back. So let's look over here and see if this chat room is going to work. And well, let's let that run there for a minute. Nope, it's still not
triple A.
So those are some things to think about. Yeah, make sure you keep a good supply of silver, and there will always be a way to continue to make silver. You may have to use a little bit of ingenuity, but think some of the worse comes to worse, you can probably take some of that silver, and I've never tried this. I have no reason to believe that it wouldn't work even better than just dropping silver coins in the water. Remember, I told you, your great granddad probably took a silver dollar or two and dropped it in the milk bucket to help retard spoilage. Just the fact that it was sitting there helped make the milk last a little longer. That means that somehow the silver molecules were being, emitted off of the coin there somewhere or another. So that being the case, I don't know why you couldn't take a little bit of water in a glass jar or a crock, a ceramic deal or something like that, and take a couple of those coins in your hand and rub them together, and that friction and that movement has gotten, I don't think it'd have to be hard, just rubbing them together, and there should be some microscopic amounts of that silver coming off of the those coins and being suspended in the water. I would still make the water as hot as you could stand it and putting your hands in it, and do everything as much like making it with your generator as you can. And I have every reason to believe that would work. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Okay. Again, communications is going to be huge, folks. For those of you that are more fortunate than some of the rest of us, you got a few extra bucks, buy a few extra, preferably those Baofeng radios, the UV5Rs. If not, just go down and get the best quality FRS, GMRS radios that you can find. Get some extra batteries, put them in a Faraday protection deal there of some kind, and save them for your neighbors, because that's going to be key, is keeping communications up. You need to protect some radios. And remember, we talked about that. Just put them in a galvanized can lined with cardboard. Tape the lid up with the metal tape, and you'll have an expedient Faraday cage right there. You take that and put it inside your metal garage out there and everything, and you can, if you have one, and that just adds a small degree of protection in addition to your deal. Put some of your stuff in, you may have a metal gun safe that might work, you might even go down to, somewhere to buy one of those cheap metal gun safes that don't have any holes or anything in it, or tape the holes up with that metal tape. Put some radios, a cheap laptop in there, a few things that you might need afterwards, and maybe a watch, a regular digital watch. Just go down and buy a new one for $30 at Walmart and put it in there, and if nothing has happened in 5 years, then take that one out and throw it away and put you another one in there. But CB radios, yeah, that would be a good thing. I think that being redundant in your communications, I don't think you can be redundant enough in your communications. CB, FRS, GMRS, shortwave, 10 cans in a string, whatever you can find. I think there's lots of ways to every different means and frequency that you can cover, I think, is a very good thing. Yakima Glock, good job. You know, I'm glad to hear you're doing that. You're actually doing it. Son, I am so pleased to hear that you're actually doing something. Buying a small can, foil tape, just got it yesterday, ready to go. Okay, outstanding. Very good. Doc's got a hell of a point there. Able to produce small amounts of electricity, put you way, way ahead of anybody else. You might, just having enough to charge a phone, charge a battery, charge a radio, a little tiny bit of light to help with emergency medical procedures, something to help with education and reading for kids, something for those, if you could just get one 25-watt light bulb to run in the middle of the winter when it gets dark at 4:30, and, when you've got other things you need to do, if you need a little light, then, I think that's an outstanding idea. And Yakima Glock, good. Boy, you are on top of things. That's a good job. Yeah, that's, matter of fact, I just camoed up a rifle yesterday, another one. Most of my important ones are done. And I gotta remind everybody, we need to get over that that emotional bond we have, that cosmetic affection, whatever you want to call it, for some of the guns that we have. Yeah, I'm not saying you have to paint them all, but there's going to be some of them, they need to be colored. I had Amy help me today, and it's probably going to take me a few days to get it put together, but we have a ton of still pictures and a few little short videos to kind of show you the effect of camouflage. And more importantly, I guess more accurately, we talked the other day about black. Remember how black screws up your camouflage? So I took pictures in civilian clothes with black guns, camouflage guns, silver guns, wooden stock guns, all of those that are hop around, think you need to put candles in your Faraday cage, but it wouldn't hurt to have them in there just for emergency's sake. You don't need the protection for them. Yeah, it may not be a bad idea. Yakima Glock, you need to get over that, buddy. These pretty guns, they're pretty when they're camouflaged, too, because they look safer. But I went up through this in stages. I started in just the same thing that I wear every day, just the civilian clothes, 5'11 shirt and jeans. And then I put on a gray jacket. I did it first with the jacket front open and then zipped it up. Camouflage gun, black gun, silver, you know, stainless gun. I went to just having I just changed hats after that. Tried a couple of different types of sunglasses after that. I put on a multicam shirt and then multicam pants and then a woodland camo shirt. And with all these different types of guns. And then I went with a boonie hat, and then a camouflage mask, and then full camouflage, sticks like you do in the military or, you know, bow hunters and stuff. And did black boots, tan boots, got in the woods, in the back in the bushes a little bit more. I wasn't trying to demonstrate how to hide and disappear. I was trying to demonstrate a little bit what the different levels of camouflage and how it helps a little bit, and how the black was so horribly detrimental to your camouflage. And then I had one where I was moving a little bit, moved around behind some bushes so you can kind of see what it would look like on the move, a couple little short videos. So I'll get all that put together. When I do, I'll put a YouTube a video together for YouTube. But I'm also going to put the whole long series of still pictures on my blog with a text explanation of each one of how and why I did everything and what to look for and what to expect. That'll be on my blog, which is at theshootingbench.info. And I haven't put anything on there recently. It's been a couple of months since I've done anything with that. But I'll also put all those on my online album so that I can post them on the chat room here once in a while when we start talking about this kind of stuff. And yeah, I'll have them, I may put a few of them on Facebook, I don't know. But I'll have them all on my blog available, theshootingbench.us. The last story that I wrote there actually was probably August or September was the last one I put on there. I'm not like some of these guys that put stuff on there every single day so that you, if you miss a day, you feel like you've missed a episode of your soap opera or something. So I just put them on there when I think there's something really significant enough that I have the time to do it, then I do it. I don't, then guess what? I don't. So there you have it. Okay, well, I hope you guys got some good out of this. Now, this was all, you know, just kind of off the cuff. I didn't have any notes or anything to go by. I just kind of as things popped up and questions materialized, well, then we talked about that a little bit. So hopefully it will help some of you. If it doesn't do anything else, even if you don't take any of the suggestions and advice that I give you, at least maybe it will help you to, you know, to think for yourself, to give you some ideas. That's what I tell you about a lot of these. You'll get a lot of these books and stuff that you read that I say, you know, they're kind of like training manuals. It doesn't mean that I think that these things are they're gospel advice for you. It means that they make you think. And I say the same thing for movies. The movies, they're movies. And I don't think that they should all be training films. But they make you think. What would happen if he would have done this instead of that? I can see how that would work and why that didn't. So, you know, that they may be, either way, it can give you something to think about. If nothing else, it gave you a great way to waste an hour and 3 minutes tonight, if nothing else. All right? Thanks, His Aviator, for posting that up there. I appreciate it. Okay. B2 Basic, you know, honey, I'm sorry, you got in here a little late. I did 2 hours for 4 years. Did two hours for 5 years, and just did a couple hours a week prior to that. Okay, man, I'll be over in just a minute. So anyway, but part of the reason that I've gone to an hour is I'm just damn sure getting burnt out. I just devoting all this time to this and everything. It'd be different if we were, you know, making a living at it. If I was Rush Limbaugh and making $9 million a year doing this, I wouldn't give a damn how long. I'd stay on the radio all day long. But with trying to devote some time to my own preparations and trying to make a living and be with my family and everything else that I do, my hour is just about as much as I could do. However, I don't mind going over. I don't mind going over at all when we have good things to talk about. And we can keep on a roll. Well, I don't mind doing that. I don't want to be a snob about it. I'm just trying to get a little bit of my time back here for the time being. Okay. Let's see. We rights at risk. You know, I would have no problem doing that. And I told you I've decided thanks to a couple of listeners, I've decided that we're not going to do away with the gun-related show on Thursdays. However, I may throw in another news deal or something once in a while, but we're still going to do the gun thing on Thursday nights. If we want to do a little more devoted to this subject here, I'm all for it. I don't mind it at all. So I'm here for you guys. If I can offer anything that helps you in some way, well, that's hunky-dory. If not, well, I don't know what to tell you. I guess you wasted your money. Oh, wait. No, we are still doing this for free. So, all right. I wouldn't have it any other way. I don't ever want that to change. So, all right. Well, I'm just sitting here babbling out both sides of my mouth here and not accomplishing anything. So I think I'm going to get the hell out of here. I'll see you all tomorrow night. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of The Shooting Bench. Please join Cope Monday through Friday for the most politically incorrect firearms information show on talk radio.
Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for you to decide who you are. Somebody should call them. Somebody should write a letter. Somebody should try and stop that. Somebody should do something. I challenge you to look in the mirror and tell me what you see. If there's somebody there, That would be you. It's time for you to do something. There is no doubt that the Constitution is hanging by a thread. It's not going to wait for us much longer.